So we're doing Magid. Magid is the biblical mitzvah we have tonight. Separate from the mitzvah of Chinuch, we have a biblical mitzvah to tell over the story. But I see one of our sons is sitting far from the table. Ariel, how could we have the Seder without you? Take off your knapsack. Join the table. Welcome to the Model Seder 5773. Come, you got to sit close to the table. You know, there is that fifth son now. That doesn't even show to the Seder. Yes. But you're not that son. You've shown. Very good. Halachma Anya. This poor man's bread. The Achalu Avatana Barat de Mitzrayim. Our forefathers ate it in Egypt. You notice that? Matzah has a dual meaning. When they were in Egypt, they were already eating matzah before the Exodus, because that's what the Egyptians used to feed the slaves.
Matzah,
yeah, be quick about it. Come on, under 18 minutes, get the bread out of the oven. Quick, and I don't want you spending too much time in the bathroom either, so I want you eating this bread so you'll be fully constipated. That was the idea of the matzah.
Wait, so then what's the whole big thing about them being cooked in the sack?
Thank you. So the matzah has a dual meaning. The matzah represents what we just said, that our forefathers ate it in Egypt as slaves. That's why it's lechem oni, poor man's bread. That's what we just said. This poor man's bread that our forefathers ate in Egypt. Kol dechafin, whoever's hungry, yete, let him come v'yechul and eat with us. Kol ditzrich, whoever finds it necessary, yete, let him come v'yifsach and join our paschal offering. Hashatahacha, this year we're here, l'shana haba b'arad Yisrael. Next year we wish ourselves we'd be in the land of Israel. Hashatahavdei, this year we are servants. L'shana haba b'nei chorin, next year we wish ourselves to be completely free. We're not yet completely free. Okay, now we, in ancient times, we would ask the servant, or we would personally act as though the meal were over. We would remove all the food from the table. Today, or not, we don't have tables to remove. So instead, what we do is we cover the matzahs. But the idea of covering the matzahs is really like to pack them up, as though to say, the meal is over. Why are we doing that? We want the kid to ask. So what we do now is, in my house, I get up and I tell my wife, thank you, the food was great. What a wonderful meal. Everything was delicious. Thank you so much, and thank you everyone for coming. And that's when the guests who don't know what's happening really panic. Rabbi, you're not going to tell me the meal was just that little piece of vegetable, right? That's the idea, to get him to panic, to say, what's wrong here? What's going on here? So today we just cover the matzahs, but you have to do it in a real way. The idea is to get the kid to ask, what's going on? We're filling the second cup of wine. Now, in the child's mind, when do you fill a cup of wine? When you're about to bench, right? You bench over a cup of wine. So it really looks like the meal's over. What are you filling a cup of wine for again? We didn't even start the meal. You didn't need anything. You didn't serve anything. Ah, you have questions? Good. Now let's start talking. So this is the last thing we're going to do that's different, to get the kid to ask questions. So now, let's all fill one another's cups of wine, grape juice, and we'll begin with the manishtana. If the kid hasn't asked questions by now, then he's a dunce. There's nothing we can do. That's why we feed him the lines and we tell manishtana, here's what you should be asking. But the manishtana, again, is not really the ideal. The manishtana was put into there to help out those who don't have questions. But we want them to ask their own questions. Use their seichel. Yeah. Mr. Davidson, can we get another bottle? Sure,
cross.
Okay, so we're continuing with our magid, with the famous manishtana. Now that we've done everything different, the kid should have asked some questions by now. And we all know the tune for manishtana. And nowadays, traditionally, we all say the manishtana. It's very cute to have the little ones say the manishtana. That's fine. Just shouldn't spend too much time on it. What are we going to ask? We're asking manishtana laila zemikol alelot. That's what we're asking. What caused this night? What's the change that is the cause for all the other changes on tonight? And then we're going to list four things that are different. Number one. The child is accustomed in the biblical times, or in temple period times, the manishtana was composed in temple period times, that whenever you'd bring an offering of thanks, you'd have matzah, but you'd also have loaves of bread. You'd have 40 loaves of bread, some 30 and 10, matzah and leaven. So he's looking at it and saying, okay, I understand you want to say thank you tonight. Where's the leaven? Doesn't seem to be the regular thank you offering going on here. Every other night we eat chametz and matzah. Every other night, we have all kinds of vegetables and salads on the table. Tonight, all I see is maror. Every other night, we don't go around dipping. Tonight, you already dipped the karpas and the salt water. And I see you have another dip here just waiting. The karpas dip just waiting. So you're going to dip twice tonight. Why? And every other night, You can eat sitting, or when we'd eat sacrifices, we'd be leaning. But tonight, every time we're about to eat, you remind the soul, make sure to lean. What are we all leaning for? So then we're going to answer the child. So that's the question of the Manishtana. Manishtana halayla ze mikol halaylot, mikol halaylot, shebechol halaylot, anu ochelim chametz umaza, halayla ze, halayla ze, kulo matza, halayla ze, halayla ze, kulo matza, shebechol halaylot, anu ochelim shea, שיער ירקות, הלילה זה, הלילה זה מערו, הלילה זה, הלילה זה מערו, שבכל הלילות איננו מתבילים אפילו פעם אחת, אפילו פעם אחת, הלילה זה, הלילה זה, שתי פעמים, הלילה זה, הלילה זה, שתי פעמים, שבכל הלילות אנו אוכלים בין יושבינו בין מסובין, בין יושבינו בין מסובין, הלילה זה, הלילה זה, כולנו מסובין, הלילה זה, הלילה זה, כולנו מסובין. So the kid asked his questions and now we're starting the story. Our job as parents is to tell a story. Gentlemen, you should be so rich with midrashim and details of what happened in Egypt that you shouldn't be interested in spending 20 minutes, like many families do, saying the Manishtana in 15 different languages, and every child says it's standing on the chair. Fine, you want to do it, do it. It's a nice experience for the kids. But at least you should have prepared so much information for this night that that's not the filler. That's not the highlight of the night. Maybe the kid enjoys it, but the highlight of the night should be all the information that you're going to tell your children tonight, and that involves preparation. So we're going to cover as much as we can tonight as we go through the story. And now we begin, we're going to answer the child. And remember, we said that we begin our story with our shameful past. Two opinions in the Talmud, what that means. One opinion is, right now we're going to say how we were slaves. That's the shameful past we're discussing. The other opinion is that we go all the way back to Abraham and we mention the shameful past that we were once upon a time pagans. And we're going to do both opinions tonight. Notice that we uncovered the matzah because remember we said the matzah is called lechem oni, poor man's bread. Well, there's another reason it's called lechem oni. Because you're supposed to be one, you're supposed to be announcing, proclaiming your history over the bread. It's supposed to be hands-on education. You're supposed to tell the kids, see this? This is what we're going to discuss tonight. It's lechem oni. You're supposed to tell, answer, proclaim, declare over this bread, over the matzah, the whole story of our history. And that's what we're beginning now, the story of our history. And so we uncover the matzah because it's all supposed to be recounted over the matzah. And our story begins. Avadim hayinu lefaro b'mitzrayim. We used to be slaves. You know what it means, slaves? So you have to talk to the kid in his language. Those of you who have been at my Seder know that at this stage of the Seder, I pull off my belt and I start whipping the table. So the kids understand what it means to be a slave. And the kids, they don't, you know, you make it live and they understand. You start talking to them theory, they don't understand. Okay, it's going to be a little harder than usual. But at any rate, the theatrics here are very important. So I tell the kids in a language that the little ones understand. You know what I mean? Slaves, they used to whip me. You understand? They had this whip and they'd say, you got to work. You got to get this many bricks ready. I didn't know how to make bricks. Notice I'm telling the kids my story. Because to the kids, they understand that. Start telling them something happened 2,000 years ago. They don't understand. What's 2,000 years ago? Your great-great-great-great-great-granddad. They don't understand what that means. And part of the mitzvah of the night, as we will see, is Chayav Adam Liros Esatzmo. You're supposed to envision it as though you yourself left Egypt. So that's how we tell the story. They had whips. We were slaves. I didn't have time to sit and play games with you. The Egyptians would come in the middle of the night and they'd tell me, get out to work. Before you would wake up from bed, I'd be out in the fields. The kids would wake up and we'd leave them a little bit of crumbs to eat because we weren't home. We were outside working. You know, Ima, she was out making bricks. I was out cooking for the Egyptian. You would wake up in the middle of the night and Abba and Ima weren't home. Why? Because Avadim Ayin, we were slaves. There was this really evil man named Paro, a midget. This tool, you see your little sister? She's taller than him. Paro was a little midget, and he had this long beard that reached the floor. And he was a very cruel man. Paro hated the Jews, and he would always think, how could I make them suffer more? And we were all slaves to this cruel man, and he was a magician. He knew how to do all kinds of tricks and sorceries, and he had a lot of servants. And he was the king of this evil place called Mitzrayim. Avadim hayinu. We were slaves to Paro in Mitzrayim. Now you have to understand, we were thinking, maybe we can escape. How could we get out of this place? The name of the place was Mitzrayim. What does the word Mitzrayim mean? Dungeon. Captivity. Enclosure. All the time the Egyptians had plans and traps set up. They'd have wild animals set up on one end. They'd have armed forces on another end. When slaves would try to escape, they knew they were doomed. Your uncles tried to escape. The tribe of the sons of Ephraim, they tried to leave early. They killed them all out, and they left thousands of bodies to rot. There were bones. If you wanted to travel out, you'd see rows and rows of bodies lining the streets of slaves that tried to escape. No slave escaped from Egypt for centuries. And that's where we were. Avadim hayinu lefarob Mitzrayim. So you notice, our focus is not the words of the Agada. The words of the Agada, we have to speak in their language. We start with the words of the Agada, and then we add our midrashim to make it come to life for the kids. Now, depending on the children's age, you have to gauge what's fit for that age and what's not. And some kids are too young to hear about bones and you were being whipped. Some kids are too sensitive. You have to match the story to the kids. But I can tell you that when I tell the story, the kids are spellbound. The kids are sitting there, their eyes wide open, because it's a fantastic story. You just got to come to life. Don't be bound by the words of that Gada. Take the words and come off of the words and make it come to life. I tell my kids, you know, we were standing there, we were talking, I was meeting with other people. Notice me, I talk about myself, yeah? I was meeting with other people, we tried to figure out how can we get out of here. We couldn't figure out anything. Every year we'd have secret meetings, try to figure out how could, we couldn't figure it out. But you know who could? Hashem took us out of there. It was impossible for us to get out. Every plan we tried to figure out couldn't work. But Hashem took us out of there. Boy, did he do it with might. The Egyptians were finished. They said, go, we can't, you won. If God wouldn't have taken us out, we'd still be there. Could you imagine that? You know how much the Egyptians hate us even today? No, I don't have time to tell
they
you.
Just sent the locusts.
What?
They just got attacked by locusts.
But we'd still be there. Could you imagine waking up in the morning and not seeing your kids? Being out at work, 2 o'clock in the morning, the Egyptians would pull them out of bed before they had a normal night's sleep. You know, the Egyptians made them work so hard that the men wouldn't even come home to sleep at night. They'd say, the time it takes me to walk home and walk back is not worth it. The women would come out to the field to feed them their supper because the men didn't have strength to come home at the end of a day's work. They just collapse in the field. So again, these are the things, depending on the child's age, that we tell them, this is where we'd still be today if not for what happened tonight. Even if we're all so intelligent and wise and understanding and elders, even if we're masters of Torah, the mitzvah tonight is to tell over the story. So guys, don't get bogged down with a lot of things you don't understand in the Agada. Read them and fly through them and expand on the things you do understand. Tell over the story you do understand. The story. Not all kinds of vertalach and gematrias that have nothing to do with what we're talking about tonight. The story. There's enough in the story we have to discuss tonight. And the more you tell, the better it is. There's no deadline. The deadline is in the morning. Yeah. You had the great sage, Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus. He didn't start learning until he was 25. He was an old man. He didn't know Shema. He didn't know anything. His soulmate, his contemporary, was Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananiah, the blacksmith, who worked really hard to make a living. An old sage who was a tremendous stargazer. He knew all the astronomy in the books. He was the great protagonist who fought the Christians in all their philosophical debates. He was a brilliant man. He had disgusting features, but the Roman emperor used to take his counsel. He was brilliant, sitting with Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, the great sage who at age 18 was considered the chief rabbi of Israel, and Rabbi Akiva, who only started learning Torah at 40, and Rabbi Tarfon, the great sage who was a Kohen, Rabbi Tarfon, who started out his life impoverished. and ended up being so wealthy. All these five great rabbis were all leaning in Bnei Brak. You think they're the greatest sages. They know it all, right? All night long, they're telling over the story. Till the students came and said, "Rabbis, time to go pray." Because that's how far, that's the limit. We said, say as much as you can. You finish when it's time to go down in Shachris. That's your limit. Now you have to understand, this: the story of Exodus is not only what we say tonight. Like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, and we'll pick up here in 1 second. Yes?
So they didn't get to the meal, they just told the story?
No, they got the meal, and after the meal they kept telling the story. That's what happens in my house too. We eat the meal, and then we keep saying the story.
That was after the destruction of the temple, which was, right? This was right? The foxes said, so as bad as things were, they were probably in Bnei Brak, right? They say, and the kid came and said, there's still someone still saying Shema, Judaism still going on.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. Very nice. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, it was though I was 70 years old, there was this argument on every night. Do we have to commemorate the Exodus from Egypt or not? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said yes. The rabbi said no, and he couldn't win the fight. Until Ben Zoma taught, the verse says, commemorate the Exodus from Egypt all your days, the days and the nights. This has nothing to do with Pesach, technically. It's a mitzvah every night of the year to commemorate. And that's what we say in Shema, the parasha of Tzitzis. The sages say, even in the days of the Messiah, after all the great salvations of the Messiah, we'll still be talking about the Exodus from Egypt. And now we come up to a song. Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu, Baruch Shenatan Torah, Shenatan Torah Le'amo Yisrael, Baruch Hu. Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu, Baruch Shenatan Torah, Shenatan Torah Le'amo Yisrael, Baruch Hu. You guys are lazy. Come on, you're sleeping. I left my epic comb in here. No one's touching it.
I take it. I don't know if it was...
You have too much respect, huh?
I left the game is on.
The game is on.
Don't fear, I hate it in the library. Okay.
I'm getting very important notes, so if I'm not playing Afikomen at the moment, please forgive me.
Okay.
I was going to take it, but
everyone's shifting the blame to you. Come on, guys, you can get off your seat and come out here and get your Afikomen. Excuses. Excuses.
What's the significance of Baruch HaMakom?
Excellent. What are we saying when we say Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu? So one understanding is that we're saying a blessing that's introductory to the story we're going to recount.
Well, we didn't recount the story yet?
Well, we started. But now we're going... Another understanding is that this is like a blessing that begins the story. And this terminology of Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu Baruch Shenatan Torah is really found in other Midrashim, where the Midrashim are about to go off on a whole story, so they begin with a blessing. It's like a person would begin a story and say, God is so amazing. He's done such amazing things. Let me tell you a story. So that's the... If you do comparative literature, you find in the Tana de Be'elio, you find similar terminology that introduces a medrash. So that's what's happening here. There's much to be discussed about the idea, why is God called the Makom? What does that mean, he is the Makom?
The place.
What does that mean, philosophically? Now, at the end of the Seder, if we have time, we have to discuss the idea that Mitzrayim represents the idea of constriction, limitations, and Hashem is called the Makom, the ultimate place, which represents the idea that Chabad is famous for, the idea of Tzimtzum, the idea that God, so to speak, made room for the world. He is the place. He doesn't need place. He made place for the world. Yeah? He had to, so to speak, limit himself to make room for the world. So that's a broad topic, and why over here we need to describe God as such. And Bezrat Shem at 3-4 in the morning when we finish our Seder, we'll try to take time to discuss that. We still have koach. Okay? Notice the four terms of Baruch. The number four is going to be repeated throughout the Seder. Keneged arbavanim diberat Torah. The Torah speaks about four types of sons, because there are four places where the Torah gives us the commandment to recount the story of Exodus. Our sages say, why does the Torah repeat it four times? Because the Torah is just telling you that there are four situations a person can encounter in life. Some want to say the four sons are four components within each human being. Some want to say the four sons correspond to four stages within life. But the simple understanding is that the four sons correspond to four potential circumstances you'll find yourself at the Seder. And you have to know that you could be the best parent in the world, but your child has free will just like you have free will. You chose to keep mitzvos, he has that decision to make too. And so the Torah acknowledges that. And the first son the Torah talks about is which? The wicked son. So the Torah describes four sons. Echad Chacham, number one, is the wise son. Echad Rasha, number one, is the wicked son. Echad Tam, number one, is the whole son. Echad Sheino Yodea Lishol, number one, is the son that doesn't know how to ask. Our tradition is that when it says Echad Echad, the stress is they are all number one. We can't put them all as number one, right? There's no way to say four things as number one. So we say Echad 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 Echad. Whenever it says Echad Echad, it's coming to say they're all number one. Interesting thought. Oh, so ordinarily we say that in Tanakh quotes, there's an ordering. And the ordering might be an order of importance, an order of severity. It connotes a certain difference between them. And the Bryce over here, when it says Echad, 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 is telling you there's no difference. On whatever level you might think to discern between them, they're all number one. God shows up to Abraham and says, I want you to take your singular son. What does Abraham say? I have two singular sons. But what happens when Abraham comes to the mountaintop and he asks Ishmael, what do you see? And Ishmael says, I see a mountain. And Avram says, stay with the donkey. In other words, you're no different than the donkey. Avram saw that Ishmael was different than Yitzchak. And yet when God tells him, I want you to take your singular son, what does Avram say? I have two singular sons. God says, nah. Avram says, what? Can I start making boundaries in my heart? Avram loves Ishmael, even though Ishmael is wrong, which deserves a broader discussion.
What was the whole thing about the mountain? What was wrong?
Why didn't Ishmael see God's presence on the mountain? Because he was like a donkey. He was so into the physical world, he didn't connect with the spiritual concept. So Avram, who's all about spirituality, knows that Ishmael isn't where he should be. And yet when God tells him, take your singular son, he says, I have two singular sons. Chachama Umer. How does a wise son ask the questions? The wise son is going to start asking you, I know the mitzvos are divided into testimonials. Some of the mitzvos we do testify. What mitzvos do we do testify? What mitzvos do we do testify? Why do you wear a yarmulke? Why do you wear a yarmulke? Gentlemen, why are you wearing a yarmulke?
Something's above us.
Oh, I'm testifying. There's someone above me. I can't just do whatever I want. There's God's presence in the world. Why do you wear tefillin? It's a sign. I was taken out of Egypt with an outstretched hand. That's why I wear tefillin. Yes? Okay. Well, why do you have a mezuzah? You put it on your doorpost as declaration. I'm a monotheist. There's only one God. We have many mitzvahs that are testimonials. I'm testifying. This is testimony to what happened. What's the matzah? The matzah is corresponding to the Exodus from Egypt. So you have mitzvahs that correspond. They're testimonials. They bear testimony. So the wise son says, what are the testimonial mitzvahs? What are the statutes? I know there are mitzvahs I don't understand. What are the laws that God commanded you? And you're going to tell him all night long, down to the end of the story, which is no dessert tonight. That's it. This is our dessert. Because we're going to keep talking. Because you're going to see his parents that very often when the kid comes and asks you questions, you don't have time. I have a very interesting thing going on now. I have a chavrusa with my son. Every time we sit down for our chavrusa, he starts asking me questions. So initially I said, okay, we sat down to learn Mishnayos. Why is he asking me these questions? But okay, I played along and I answered the questions. And then it dawned on me that he's asking me questions he asked me before that I didn't have time to answer. So now when we sit down to learn, he comes back and says, I asked you this, now what's the answer? Now you have time for me, right? So now he comes back with the questions that I never had time to answer him. That's legitimate. But you'll see as parents that that happens often, that your kid is asking you questions. God, why are you, Dad, why are you Jewish? So you tell him, God, it's long and complicated. We'll talk about it, right? Tonight, no dessert, no going out to neighbors. You're sitting here, Dad, and we're talking. And your job is to answer my questions. So for the kid, this is a gold mine. And that's what the Mishnah tells us. That's what the Haggadah tells us. That to the wise son, you teach him, and you teach him from the onset, no going out to dessert tonight. Tonight you have me. Whatever you want. It's like a Thursday night. Yes? Open session. You could ask all your questions. Rashama Umer. What does the wicked one say? Ma'avodah azot lachem. What's this work you guys doing? And he is stressing two things. Oh, is this a bothersome thing? And B, he's saying, you guys. Lachem lo lo. His point is you, not me, not him. He denied the most fundamental principle, the unity of Israel. And so he says, I'm not a part of this. And so you have to, what does hakei es shinav mean? What does hakei? Hakei means to
darken.
Hakei es shinav is really to
fling.
What?
He fling his teeth.
No. What would you call the process when you put vinegar on something? It
sting.
Eats away, is it? It stings at it. What? When you pucker your lips because you ate something that's sour. What's that called when you eat something that's sour? That feeling?
It's a reaction.
Right, but what are you doing? What is the vinegar doing to your teeth, to your mouth? So that's what the word hakei means. To hakei, hakei means to give him that feeling as though he just ate something really sour. Hakei is shinav. Make his teeth feel a little dulled, a little bit like he got a splash of vinegar in his mouth, and tell him, Babuzas Hashem libi tzitimi mitzrayim. You answer him. You tell him, this is what God did for me when I left Egypt. And you're hinting to him, you're saying, leave it low, low, me, not him, if he were there, he wouldn't be redeemed. And this is a phenomenal educational tool. I'll tell you a story. A young man shows up to yeshiva, and he's listening to a shir, and then he raises his hand and says, Rabbi, with all due respect, that doesn't make any sense. So the rabbi listens to him and then says, look, I know you don't mean to say that doesn't make any sense, because that's God's mitzvah here. And a person who says that God doesn't make any sense, well, he might not get to the world to come. So you didn't mean that. You meant to say it doesn't make sense to you. You don't understand it, right? So in so doing, the rabbi's telling him, you know, if you did mean that, then you just have to understand you're putting yourself in hot water. So you probably didn't mean that, right? So as an educational tool, very often we hint to the person, leave it low, low. You're telling him, you know, yeah, well, when I was in Egypt, so those who joined with everyone else and were a part of the suffering with everyone else and were a part of the redemption with everyone else, so they got out. So this is what God did for me because I was a part of it. And you're hinting to him, buddy, I recommend you remain a part of it even if you have questions. Don't go pointing fingers and saying, why did God do this for you? And that's a very important tool. You will find sometimes children, sometimes students can be super abrasive. I had a student not so long ago who sat one class. We weren't talking about Jewish philosophy at all. And he spent the whole class discussing why he doesn't believe in God. This guy comes from an Orthodox family. Doesn't believe in anything we're discussing. And I have a whole class to deal with, but I have him who has a real chip on his shoulder and a real problem. So I stopped the class and I addressed his questions, and he kept firing back with all the bitterness, and I kept trying to dull his sting. And then the class, I said, look, you're entitled to think whatever you want, but this is what traditional orthodoxy believes, and the logic behind it is such and such, and no one can tell you what to do with your life, but I can tell you that this is Orthodox Judaism, and this is what Orthodox Jews do, and this is the logic behind it. And I hope one day you'll understand enough to respect it. But, and you know, he's really sharp. Okay, we leave the class. 1 o'clock in the morning, I get an SMS. Rabbi, thank you for your patience and your love. A month later, the guy turns around, and suddenly he's a different person. Comes Purim, he's stone drunk. We have to have a talk. What do you want? Okay, go fight with a drunkard. Grabs me by the collar and says, I want to tell you something. I'm dying to listen to this one, right? He says to me, there are two types of spirituality in this world. So I'm faking seriousness, nodding my head. He says, one type of spirituality is the meat and potatoes, learning Talmud, learning the texts. I know I hadn't done too much of that this year. There's another type of spirituality, and that's the idea that you're connected. There is a God. There is a Judaism, and you're a part of it. And I want you to know that this year I became a part of it. Goodbye. And he goes off in his drunken stupor. Okay, blew me away. But I felt that we were fulfilling what it says here. Meaning sometimes you have to be able to give that little bit of a bite and tell the guy, you know, you don't want to buy into it. You can choose your path, but you have to realize that what you're saying is putting yourself out of the fold. There is a tradition. There is a way that the Allah expects us to do things, and there is a way that Jews behave. And what we're telling the Rasha is, we're not telling him, hey, you're a wicked son, what's wrong with you? No, we're telling him you have to realize the route you're taking. And we're alluding to it. We're alluding to it as we're addressing it. And in so doing, we're also opening the door for him to come back. But we're also pointing out to him that he's already on his way out, which is very important. Sometimes parents don't want to tell a kid that. But sometimes it's important to tell a kid that. You realize where you're headed. Do you realize what you're saying and what you're doing? Tam ma omer. What does the whole son say? The son that, like, you know, happy-go-lucky. Mazot, he looks at the table and says, what's going on? God took us out with a strong hand out of Egypt. Egypt was a house of slaves. This goes back to what we discussed. No one ever made it out of Egypt. You couldn't escape Egypt. The son who doesn't even know how to ask, you start the conversation. The verse says, you initiate the conversation. So that's what I do with my 3-year-old, with my 4-year-old, with my 5-year-old, each one on their level. I start the conversation. You start telling him. This is what God did on my behalf when we left Egypt. And that's what we just said. To that kid, you got to tell the story as though it happened to you. You take the belt and you bang on the table and you tell them the story. You know, to the little kids, I tell them there was a very bad man named Paro. And he hurt Abba very bad. And Hashem helped us and he took us out of Mitzrayim. And that's what we're celebrating tonight. Got that? Yes. Good. That's it. We did what they could understand. You get a little older, you tell them a little more. Yeah.
What did they say to you? Like, what do you mean, really? You were a slave? Like, you were in Egypt?
If they're old enough to ask that question, so I say, it wasn't really me, it was my grandparents. Depending on how old they are. What? Saba and Safta? No, their grandparents. Okay. When a kid is old enough, when a kid hits 8 and 9, he starts understanding the concepts of time. He can start understanding the idea of so many years ago. But when a kid is 5, 6, 7, you start talking to him about that, you know. It's like, I told you a story about my kids and God. Two kids are walking with me, and one says to the other one, one asks me, could you call God? So the other one says, of course he can't call God. So the little one says, why not? So her big brother says, he doesn't know the number. You know, I thought he was smart enough. Right? He's 5, she's 3. So go talk to her about 2,000 years ago. The 5-year-old is telling the 3-year-old, of course Abba can't call God. Okay. Yachol Merosh Chodesh. I'm telling you a conversation from this year. From between my 5-year-old and 3-year-old. So go tell him 2,000 years ago. 4,000, 3,500 years ago.
Yeah.
They're not going to get it. Yachol Merosh Chodesh. What?
From this area, it's a local call.
It's a local call, right? Okay.